Get ready to expand your horizons and discover great reads. This is Bookbound, a library podcast. In this new chapter of our Reader's Advisory podcast, we have segments on a couple of memoirs that we've loved, books that are vaguely, at least, animal related, and then we've got a couple other picks for you. We'll also have a segment on how people are tracking their reading in the Kettle audience, as well as the Michigan Notable Books that were just announced in early January. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined by Mari Garza and Cheryl Lindemann, and we're Kettle's primary selection team. We are chatting books, and we're going to, I think, jump right into it today.
Yes, we are. Hello, this is Mari, and I'm going to start out with A First Time for Everything. This is by Dan Santat. It's a graphic novel memoir at the J level. And this is also what was selected as the National Book Award winner for young people's literature. It is a really lovely, lovely book. The story kind of starts out, it's set back in 1989, which for anyone who's kind of Gen X-ish, you might remember that time period. And Dan is a middle schooler. He's not had the best experience in middle school. He lives in a very small town in California, and he's had, you know, perhaps some mortifying experiences involving involving like having to recite things in front of a class and just feeling very like lacking in confidence. And his teacher and his parents end up really suggesting that he go on this trip to Europe, which is for, you know, a select number of students in a school. Because he's going to be starting high school next year, and his parents just really want him to get out and go into the world. And it is so lovely. You go out and he goes out and immediately he's, you know, visiting all these towns in Europe. He's in Paris, in Austria, in Germany, and he says later on at the end of the book, he's like, I'm not sure that if it were going on today that kids would be allowed to do all this. But he at one point like is out in the night, you know, kind of harassed a little bit by some punks, and he steals a bike. And but the main storyline is really about his connection to a young girl who's also on the trip, and she is not from his school. So they form this friendship, and it really is something that, you know, you've got a bunch of girls, by the way, who are like super bossy, the middle school girls that are there, really trying to get him to ask this, this person out. And it's really sweet, really, really sweet. They end up, sneaking into Wimbledon because he's a big, this would be in England. He's a big fan of, I'm forgetting his name. Is it John McEnroe? Mm-hmm. Just like his persona at that time. And it's just a really lovely book about growing up and coming away from something where he's really, really, more confident than when he started. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful to his parents who let him go on this trip, because I don't feel like that's a normal thing for middle schoolers to go off to Europe. I feel like that's more high school, really even college. And it was just a really lovely thing. And, you know, there are mixtapes involved, which those of us who are Gen Z, we remember those things. And there's a lot of references to poetry. I'm not sure if y'all will recognize this one. Where am I going? I don't quite know. Down to the stream where the king cups grow. I highly recommend this one for anyone, middle schoolers, but even adults too. If you follow Dan, he's an excellent illustrator. Mm-hmm. He does a lot of work with picture books, and it was really an excellent read. So,
and some great Gen X nostalgia.
For sure.
Definitely. Okay. Cool. I'm going to follow that up with a different kind of memoir. I just listened to Upcycled Self by Tariq Trotter, who also known as Black Thought. He's one of the founding members of The Roots. And he had such a... the ups and downs of his childhood are really quite amazing. And the things that his family has gone through, but still, in as much as they could, sheltered him and built him up to be, because they recognized very early on that he was an artist in multiple ways. He was a graphic artist. He is a musical genius in terms of his skills with rhymes as part of The Roots and other groups. And it's a harrowing journey from start to finish. There are things I didn't know. I haven't followed them closely enough to know, kind of beyond Questlove, like their individual stories. And I was really, really interested when I heard this was coming out. But he kind of makes the comment at the beginning that most of you know that I burned my house down when I was a kid, and I'm like, well, I did not know that. And that's got to be something that sticks with you for your life. And it was just, he was a kid. He was just, it was just doing a dumb thing, but he didn't know well enough. And it was pre-fire retardant materials. It's just, he was playing with a lighter and it dropped. It burned him, and he basically threw it, and it started a house fire. They tried to save the house, but they ended up losing basically everything and kind of couch surfing for a while. And, you know, it was just, it was something in his mind that just sort of set them on a downward spiral. There were other factors leading up to that. But in your head as a kid, when that happens, it's, you know, that guilt is going to stick with you. And he talks about, you know, the different things that happened in his life and the stuff that he's had to work through and to be a better parent to his children and to kind of let go of some of the things that he was carrying with him. But he talks about having, you know, a level of PTSD that he did not recognize as that, but, you know, but he lived through crack in Philly. And his mother became an addict. His brother was in and out of prison. His family members, even his mother and brother, actually, I mean, they did try to protect him from a lot of it, but it's where he lived. It was very much part of his life. But he also ended up going to art schools, art high schools. It's where he met Questlove. It's a very interesting story. It's really short. It's actually only a 4-hour audiobook, so it can't be a big memoir. But it covers a lot, and it was a really interesting read and an interesting look into the time, and sort of what built Black Thought. So yeah. I would highly suggest it. It's a nice, really interesting, quick read. Nice isn't quite the right word, but he does voice most of the audiobook. They have a couple of people standing in as his uncle and his mother.
Oh, cool.
Which is really interesting to hear too. But it's cool. It is a really interesting story, and I'm glad he wrote it.
That is really cool. That one really caught my eye as well. Mm-hmm. Awesome. I'm going to go in a totally different direction than the first two, into this book called The Hebridean Baker, Recipes and Wee Stories from the Scottish Islands by Connacht MacLeod, possibly a bit lighter. Connacht MacLeod, I did not know this because I do not do TikTok, but became somewhat famous from TikTok as The Hebridean Baker. I came to it because I have an obsession with the Hebrides, and that he grew up on the Isle of Lewis in particular. There's just something about that windy, kind of forlorn, rocky, that extreme beauty in nature that really appeals to me. And what I really loved about this book, again, it's a cookbook and it has lovely recipes, and I'll get into a few of those, but it's one of those books that you pick up and by the end you feel like you've taken a little trip there because the photography is so beautiful. And it has just a delightful humor through the book, and also just a true love of his home and his family. You've got recipes from his aunt in here, and it goes in all different types of directions. Get into, you know, visiting some of the Vikings, you know, monuments that are still there. Goes into Gaelic and the preservation of the language. The Scottish love of New Year's and Auld Syne. I may be saying that incorrectly, but goes into that. Harris Tweed, which is one of my favorite parts of the book, and how that's so important to the Hebrides, and how it started there and went out into the world and became like the hottest thing, like JFK wearing his Harris Tweed, that sort of thing. But all the wonderful baked goods in here. We've got his delightful West Highland White Terrier, of course, through the book. Lots of kilts and beautiful sweaters. So it's just a really fun book. Really great kind of escape to take, you know, pick this up and go through the pages. And then the recipes, of course, are just wonderful. Some of them really unique, like parsnip cake, may or may not appeal to my listeners. Some Hélan Cúis, which are actually like these cookies that are like Highland cows that he said his niece really loves. So just a really delightful book, The Hebridean Baker.
Okay, that just sounds fun and cozy.
It's wonderful.
Yes, it does.
It really is.
Now we're going to take a quick break from book talking to talk about book tracking.
Last month on socials, we asked Cattle followers, how do you keep track of the books that you read? The response was heavily weighted towards Goodreads, but there's no one way to track. People are handwriting lists, using the Cattle Reading History or Libby app history, using Storyograph, creating spreadsheets, and more.
So I do have another book. This is a JF, or what we call children's fiction, quite a meaty book. Once There Was by Kayash Monsef. And this is about a 15-year-old girl. Her name is Marjan Dastani. And the book starts out with learning that her father, who is a vet, has been murdered. And she's now in charge of running the veterinarian office. And she has some fellow staff that help her. But, of course, she's 15. She's in high school. She knows a lot about animals, but, of course, she's not really certified to treat animals. And she immediately gets a visit by someone who is calling her to another part of the world to heal an animal, a mythical animal. It's a griffin, huge animal. The description is like, sort of looks like a lion, but has these wings. So she goes to England and she tries her best to advise the family. And she's, by the way, also having a lot of experience, has experienced a lot of anger towards her father for many years, because he would often disappear, apparently, on these trips to go and take care of these special magical animals, and she's never known why he would leave. So she's really, really angry that he has never told her about it, and now he's dead, and she's like, for the first time, learning all about it. This story is really even though she's 15, and there are some scenes of the high school situation with her friends, I would definitely recommend it for any child who is, you know, grade 5, grade 6, and above, because there's a lot of fantasy and a lot of mythical animals. You learn that there is someone who is trying to control the world by saving these animals.
Yikes.
And in some ways, like doing some unethical things. And something I haven't mentioned yet is that her mother died when she was young, very young. She is half Iranian. She doesn't have a lot of connection to her Iranian heritage. It was her father who was from Iran. And you learn later in the story that he has these magical powers that have been passed on to him from his family, and now they've been passed on to her. I also want to mention that she has a friend, or she makes a friend. Her name is Malorin, who is kind of into witchcraft and magic. And for a number of reasons, Malorin comes to live with her. And it's quite funny. Malorin talks about how, you know, cell phones are forbidden going into the forest because, according to her, radio waves interfered with magical energy, which was one reason why magic is so much harder to practice today because of cell phones. And I was like, yeah, all right, let's turn off the cell phones. But I think that this story is, as I mentioned, going to appeal to anyone who's really into fantasy, and especially animals. I mean, these are very, I guess, fantastical animals. Animals that, you know, in some cases are kind of scary, and in some cases just really ill. And she's at a loss for how to take care of them. She has a lot of grief that she's dealing with because repeated over throughout the story is this, like, something is missing. Mm-hmm. And she learns later on that someone has taken away her capacity to experience grief. And yeah, eventually she gets that capacity back, and it's really amazing, the healing that she does. So I do want to recommend it for any fifth, sixth grader out there, and even a high schooler. Once There Was by Kiash Monsef.
Okay. That I love sounds like a lot going on in there.
There is a lot. And I really, it was, you know, at first I was like, oh, am I going to be able to stick with this? But yes, I think you will really like it, especially if you read it slow. You start building, you start seeing all the animal stories that are building, and the different characters that are around. So,
yep. And griffins. I mean, that's...
Yes.
I love griffins.
Yeah.
And unicorns that are on the verge of being extinct.
Well, but, yeah. Speaking of extinction. So my next book is The Tusks of Extinction by Ray Naylor. I talked about Ray Naylor last year, I think. I read Mountain in the Sea, which was hit a lot of lists, I think 2022. It was a big... It came out in 2022, and it was a very... It's a great book discussion book. My book group read it, and it's just a wonderful book. So Tusks of Extinction came out, is out this month. And this is a novella. It's short, but it's really powerful. It's positing about de-extinction experiments. So we have a group of scientists who are trying to bring back mammoths with the aid, vaguely voluntarily, of a famed elephant rights activist. But they haven't solved any of the issues that caused the extinction of elephants in the first place. This is, you know, the greed, the bloodthirstiness of humans, the need for ivory, the sheer joy of hunting, all of those things are still an issue. And so what they've done is you get quite a bit inside the head of the activist who they have approached to help them. Mind you, this is many, many, many years after her death. Again, this is a science fiction story. They want her to help guide their newly created herd because they tried to do it without her and it didn't work. And there is nobody in the world at this point who understands elephants, let alone mammoths. So they are pulling back this woman who downloaded part of her memories, and they are trying to basically say, let us put you in the matriarch of the herd, and you're going to teach them how to be elephants. What you've got there is a very angry woman who died in her efforts to save elephants, much in the sense of a Diane Fossey type character. So you've got a very angry woman, very, very intensely protective of the herd, and you've got a group of scientists who think they're doing the right thing on some level and know that they're making concessions that she would not appreciate. So it's a whole lot in a very tiny book, and it's very well done. The other's quickly becoming kind of a go-to for ecological science fiction, and he has a solid background in it, and this is just really thought-provoking, and I really love the first book, really love this one too. It's just interesting and very detailed story, especially for how short it is.
Wow, that sounds really good. This is like the second time that this ecological science fiction brought something that's really appeals to me too, which is not my genre. So that
Yeah. But this one's short. You might actually be able to do this one.
Yeah, this sounds really, really intriguing. Mm-hmm. So much going on there. Well, switching gears, still with an animal theme, but with non-mythical or bringing back extinct animals theme. It's actually a true biography, not a memoir. I almost feel like lately there are biographies, but I feel like I have not brought a lot of them to the podcast. I tend to read more memoir.
No, we do a lot of memoir instead. Yep.
Yeah, and it was sort of a mental adjustment to read a biography again. You know, I got so much more history along with it, I found. But the book here is Writing Black Beauty, Anna Sewell, The Creation of a Novel and the Story of Animal Rights by Celia Brayfield. And this is not the biggest book, so it's not the longest investment for a biography. It's not one of those giant tomes that'll sit on your nightstand. But there's a lot in here, because what this is the story of Anna Sewell and her life. And even though Black Beauty is such a popular book, I mean, it's one of the top-selling books ever, of all time. Of course, there's sort of a sad story behind that, in that Anna Sewell only lived 5 months after the book was published, and she did not see the wealth from the book in her lifetime, nor did her family. And this goes into that story. She was born in 1829 in England into a Quaker family, and the book was published in 1877. She did not have a long life, and most of her life was marked by illness. She twisted her ankle. And back then, that was really serious, because she probably sprained or broke something inside that never healed correctly. And so it also actually gave her a disability that she had throughout her life that became extremely painful as she got older. But this book includes, of course, her life story, and interestingly, a lot of information about the Quakers. Her family moved all around trying to resettle. They lose their money. They'd get money again. But the Quaker lifestyle, even when they tried to get away from it, was always a really heavy presence in their life, especially this idea of kind of like a heavy guilt, not having too much pleasure, you know, that sort of thing. So that's threaded through. But little did I know, Anna Sewell's mother, Mary Sewell, was a popular author in her time. She published a good number of books. They were sort of sweet sort of nature stories. She published poetry, so there's a lot about that. But there's also a lot about London at the time, about the filth in London, which you may have read about in other books, but about how hard life was there. We had farm animals right in the streets, lack of sanitation, extreme poverty, workhouses. And interestingly, and a big piece of the story is a man named George Thorndike Angel, who was actually an American. And part of the story is about how after Black Beauty was published, he was really looking for a way to start the ASPCA and make it stronger in the United States, and how he used Black Beauty as the book to sort of forward the animal rights cause in the United States. And he's the one who made it famous. He bought like thousands of copies and gave them for free. Many people would just have this book in their home, and he's the one who really made the book famous. So there's a lot going on here, just a really fascinating book about Victorian England, about a woman's life, about a really dedicated, wonderful person. She and her mother did so much for their communities wherever they lived. They were just really beautiful people, and that she just persevered despite disability and absolutely loved animals, and how this book was unique and different and was really the first of its kind. So highly recommend this one.
Really quick, we want to let you know about something exciting happening in the book world. The Library of Michigan announced the Michigan Notable Books on January 8th formally, and the list is a fascinating one. It's got quite a mix. It has Pulp by Abra Behrens as a cookbook. It has a lot of wonderful fiction, including Angeline Bouley's sophomore effort, Warrior Girl Unearthed. There's a little bit of something for everybody, so check that out. Again, it's the Michigan Notable Books 2024 list. It's available all over the place, including the Library of Michigan's website.
Okay, well, I do have one more book I'm going to quickly talk about. This is a picture book. I can open it for you. This is by Shinsuke Yoshitake, best-selling Japanese author illustrator. And this is an adorable book. It's about a toddler who is really wanting to take on the challenge of opening things. And he often has to go to his parent to help him opening cans, even opening packages. And I kind of had to laugh because in my own life lately, I'm feeling like, oh my gosh, things are so hard to open lately, like packages, especially jars. I mean, not long ago, I brought a jar into the office here and put it in the break room and so that someone could open it for me. But it's adorable because it's this young boy, Akira, he's feeling really frustrated that he cannot do these things on his own. And he's getting encouragement throughout the book, like, you will be able to at one point. So there's lots of different items that are drawn throughout the book, you know, with lots of sounds that go with, you know, how to open things. I think a family would really enjoy this, particularly if you have a toddler or, you know, a four-year-old who can relate to these kind of things. You can't totally do it by yourself, but eventually you will. So I Can Open It For You by Shinsuke Yoshitake.
Okay. Awesome. I was thinking we've had that experience this weekend at home. I you know, somebody not being able to open something. I tend to be the opener, but we'll see. It's just always a... my last book is Enough to Lose by R.S. Dearin. I kind of wanted to bring it to people's attention. It actually is on the 2024 Michigan Notable list, but one of the things that really caught my attention is there's just not a lot of stories set in the Thumb area of Michigan, and this is solidly set there. It covers a period, it's a interlinked short stories, sort of starting with the 1986 flood that devastated the area, and then through about the 2016 election, and it's an area that, you know, it's just a really, I feel like, a really solid depiction of rural life, but the beautiful parts of it and the really hard and heart-wrenching parts of it, the idea of that, the feeling of people feeling like they're being left behind, that the world is changing too quickly on them, that people are trying to figure out how to make things work in communities that are slowly kind of being boarded up. It's just, it's really well done. It's really well written. And if anybody's sort of jumping on, as they should, jumping on the bandwagon for The Waters by Bonnie Campbell, which is brand new. Bonnie Campbell is one of the most prominent quotes on this book, and she adored it. And it's just one of those, it really is very Michigan, very rural Michigan, and something people should take a look at. Again, that's Enough to Lose by R.S. Dearin.
Yeah, right. You just don't hear about many books set in the Thumb. Mm-hmm. I think that's very notable.
Yeah.
The last book that I have for the podcast today is a graphic novel by somebody who became well known from something else, who is Kim Joy, who, if you are a British Bake Off follower, you will know that she was a finalist in the 2018 Bake Off and brought just immeasurable joy to the show. Kim Joy just has this beautiful smile and these creative, amazing bakes that often have animals as a focus in them. And this is her first, she's written many cookbooks, but this is her first graphic novel that she wrote. And it's about a young woman named Jan who is really still living at home, trying to seek employment and really struggling. And at the heart of, it's not really defined as this, but it strikes me as a really, she's really struggling with social anxiety, but social anxiety in particular. And so she's her parents are getting frustrated with her. They're like, come on, we need to get a job. Let's go on. And as she's looking for a job one day, she sees an advertisement for this baking club in her community. And she starts with this negative self-talk. And I think what was really interesting about this book for me is it has this story that we'll get into about the baking club, but it really shines a light on the self-talk that can happen with anxiety, especially with social anxiety, and how extremely negative it can become to the person and kind of crippling. And that's how it becomes for her. So she sees this club, and she immediately goes through this her thoughts. No, they won't like me. You won't fit in. You don't know how to do this. Da, da, da. Well, she ends up finally getting herself there and getting into it, and it becomes a sort of found family. The leader of the baking club is a woman named Bee, who is just like that kind of mother figure who envelops everybody in the group. It's a multi-generational group, which is really interesting, from all different parts of the community. It's just really warm and embracing. And there's a story that happens with Bee and with the group, and a transition of Jan into greater confidence through the story. So it's just fantastic. Plus, it has Kim Joy's recipes through, including one for making turtle bread, because as I said before, Kim Joy is known for making foods that look like animals. So turtle bread does feature into the book. It's emotional. It's a really powerful look at anxiety, but it's also just a slim, brief read. I saw in a review that someone said it got them out of a reading slump. So if you're looking for something to pick up that doesn't take too long but is filled with really powerful, real emotions, I recommend this one.
Thank you, ladies, and everybody, continue on your reading journey, and we'll share a little bit more of ours later.